Hey, what's going on, everybody, and welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I am Vlad Sedler, and today I am joined by one of my colleagues, a former NFBC draft champions, DC overall champ. He is one of the best dudes around in the industry, just from like a standpoint of people, of like just like a really, really good person. And if you've met him, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Ladies and gentlemen, Lucas Beery, what's going on, man?
Not too much, man. We are in the throes of everything. Really excited to be on here with you. Feels great. And we're getting into our grooves. Just talking to a buddy today. He said his first fab period or two, he felt a little bit rusty, but then this last fab period, he felt dialed in. And I think some people can relate to that. It's a grind, but takes some getting used to. So I'm glad that we're in the throes of it.
Yeah. We'll talk about it maybe a bit later. I really need to be careful personally of like my bid amounts, like how much I'm setting and figuring out like what actually, you know, am I bidding just for the sake of grabbing, you know, the new hot player that's available, or am I actually allocating my resources properly? I think, you know, one example of that was Chase Dolander this past week. Last Sunday, I did grab him in a bunch of leagues and didn't start him this week. Didn't necessarily need to, which I guess is a good thing. But there are just a few leagues where I really felt like I needed some strikeouts. But there are going to be pitchers like that. I mean, of course, he's special. He's talented. But there are some downside there, of course, with Colorado and being a rookie. But there are going to be gems like that every single week. Something fun to bid on, shiny new toys. We got a couple this week as well. So we'll cover all of that. But we're recording here on Thursday, April the 17th, and we're going to talk mostly prospects today. And this is related to draft and hold. I'm sorry, not draft and hold, but just redraft. Guys that might be on our radars, guys that are promoted this week, guys that may be promoted in the next few weeks, and players that we want to have exposure to and pick up in FAB or maybe via trades. Just to start things off, how is your start to the season? Are there any specific players you're really happy you have a lot of exposure to? How are your dynasty squads doing? All that.
Yeah, so far it's a mixed bag for the starts. You know, I've got some teams that are doing very well. I've got some teams that need more pitching help because they've been hit with injuries. And as far as, you know, pretty thrilled that I was able to load up with Freddy Peralta. Obviously, it's a long season, and it's not like anything's guaranteed yet, but I like the strikeouts that he's been giving. And then as far as maybe a guy that I regret, that's a good question. Maybe some of the catchers, I guess, like, just it can be annoying with Sean Murphy. Like, he just gets hurt all the time, and he did hit the home runs, but it was like one of those things where his injury proneness, like certain guys, I do really feel like year to year, they just continue to get hurt. He did hit the home run, so that's good. Maybe not the best example, but it's just one of those things. You get burnt once, you're okay with it, and then it just keeps happening. It's like, I don't know about Sean Murphy again next year with all the injuries.
Well, did you bench him for any of those good weeks, or did you drop him, or what's the, or because otherwise that's like a good, I mean, that's like, if that's the
yeah,
worst,
that was a horrible that was a horrible example. I was totally spaced out on that one. I did reserve him in my DCs where I had him because he was facing the Phillies pitching staff, and I thought getting eased back into it, but I did have his home runs on the weekend, so that was good.
Very nice. Yeah, back in the mix. So let's kick things off here. A little bit of news and notes. Obviously, Spencer Strider back in the rotation. He wasn't perfect, gave up a couple of runs, but it was just nice to see him out there, his first game in a little over a year. So Spencer Strider returns. Matt Shaw. So he was going in NFBCs somewhere even close to like 200, 220 overall in the last week of main events. And he's been off to a horrific start. And I remember someone asked me just the day before, like, hey, Matt Shaw, is he worth dropping? Is he going to get the, I'm like, I don't know. He'll be fine. He's good defensively. He'll get there. And then the next day, bam, he's demoted. Are you surprised by that?
I would have been 10 days ago. I would have been more surprised, but you kind of saw this with Cam Smith where there was a lot of speculation he would be demoted. And it might seem very reactionary that a week's worth of plate appearances can determine whether a guy moves down or stays put. And as we know, that's such a small sample, it's kind of worthless. But I think a player's confidence, whenever they really start to get smoked, can take a hit. And they might see something in his mechanics or his swing or whatever, and they might think, let's just work on this at a lower level, not in the bright lights in AAA, get him down there. So I thought it was a possibility, so I wasn't too shocked, but it kind of went on a downhill turn pretty quickly. So yeah.
And something like that, it's kind of the perfect storm there, because there are guys that can play third base, and that's part of it, the depth of the team. Mm-hmm. With Vidal Brujan coming back, and they've got John Birdie, who wasn't really getting plate appearances, and then Gage Workman, the Rule 5 pick. So there are guys there that could play on, you know, on that side of the field. And so, yeah, it makes sense, you know, getting down there for a little bit. Do you anticipate people dropping him in 15s and 12s? I feel like in a 12, you kind of have to, right? I think Mager will probably put him as a drop.
Yeah, I do have him in an OC, and my instinct was immediately to just drop him. And then for a moment, I thought to myself, well, maybe I don't have to, because if he was on the wire, I would be intrigued by him in a 15. But like you said, in a 12 with so many other options, he is droppable. I'm good on corner infield, which helps there. But yeah, this can show the benefit of having an elite glove, because a guy like Pete Crow Armstrong, he wasn't going to be going down whenever he had struggled, or another player like that. With Shaw, he's an okay defender, so they're not really losing as much. So I just think that's kind of something I think about a lot.
And I mean, that's something that we can look up ourselves, right? I mean, that would be on Fangraphs, or even just the Statcast, right? You can go to the player Statcast. I mean, I do this at least for catchers. And I want to see, like, oh, wait, why last year in August or something, why was Pedro Páez getting more playing time than Ivan Herrera when Wilson Contreras was out? Oh, it's the defense. Or Higashioka there with Camposano in San Diego. It's like, so I look at that, but I thought Matt Shaw was like an okay defender, but you're right. I mean, he would have to have been like absolutely excellent there to continue.
That's you nailed it. I think if he was really saving a ton of runs for the team, that might have bought him a little bit more rope. But like you said, he's just a fine defender.
Matt Wallner, he goes on the IL with for the Twins with a hamstring injury, and now it's obviously a bummer. I don't know. I mean, in 15s, I believe he is a hold. In 12s, I haven't really thought about it all that much. I don't think I have him there. I don't expect him to be, it doesn't seem like a severe injury that he'll be out that long. And he had looked really good. I mean, this is a guy who was one of the highest strikeout rate guys in the majors, and huge pop. And his game was completely different this year. I mean, he was leading off, he was walking a ton, wasn't striking out as much as he usually was, but also wasn't hitting homers. Like he really hadn't gotten into a stride. And, you know, at some point, Matt Wallner will hit homer. So I do like him. I don't know what I'm going to do in 12s. We could talk about it on the Discord. You'll see a little bit more of Brooks Lee, last year's prospect, who was promoted. And then they acquired Jonah Bride for cash. They demoted Jose Miranda last weekend. He had been horrific. And so now Jonah Bride joins the team. Maybe he gets some plate appearances.
Yeah, you hit the main guys there with Brooks Lee. I think Bader is another one that could potentially receive everyday at-bats. He's been good so far, but his volume could go up even further.
Alex Verdugo back in the mix. Brian De La Cruz sent down for Atlanta. Atlanta bats starting to pick things up a little bit. Austin Riley is hitting well. Michael Harris the second. There's a lot of cases where where there's a player you really like, he was one of them, gets off to a slow start. In general, not too worried. I remember seeing the 4 strikeout game that he had a couple games ago. But the issue with that is when everything is compounded. Like a guy starts off slow that you drafted high, and then he gets hurt. I mean, Harris is not hurt now, but it's just like a case with like Matt Shaw, right? Same thing. Start off slow, now he's demoted to the minors. It's just a complete loss. And so those things are really scary. You kind of at least want them to get hot before anything happens, because eventually you know these guys will break out of their slump. Anyways, that's just a little side thing there on Michael Harris the second. But I think the lineup will be okay, Atlanta. What effect do you think Verdugo will have? And is he somebody that's going to be completely ignored in Fab, or like if he does something like out of nowhere, hits a home run or steals a couple of bases, will he be bid on in the double digits and 15s?
You know, obviously he's not going to draw a ton of money out of bidders, but for whatever reason, Atlanta has had this ability to resuscitate outfielders whenever they look dead. Going back to Laureano over the years, Soler was not as good as he was prior and then went to Atlanta and did really well, to guys like Eddie Rosario's had a run. So I think that they're going to look at Verdugo and maybe throw a little bit of money on him in Fab this weekend, even though it's kind of not an exciting name. Most people don't like him either. But yeah, I think maybe $3 to $5 potentially.
Makes sense there. A couple of pitchers, or at least closers, Mike Clevinger, that experience did not work out. He was even drafted a lot in the last couple of weeks, because he was so lights out in spring training. It was like, oh, they got their closer, and it's not a great team, not a great situation. I think a lot of people know, not like a great dude either, right? Was he like, what do you like, amongst other things, like spit chewing tobacco, like in his wife or girlfriend's face or something, like in kid's face. I don't know. I don't want to start rumors here. But anyways, he's gone. As soon as the season started, he was just awful. But right now the bullpen, as we thought it would be, looks nothing like it. Justin Anderson isn't around. Frazier Ellard, I forget if he's hurt or in the minors. But now it looks like Jordan Leisure, last year's kind of hot pick, is the guy kind of creeping up there. That's based on usage, looking like he might be the lead guy there. But either way, right, like these situations like this and Miami, like what are you going to be like, you know, dropping Anthony Bender for Faucher, you know, then back for Bender every week? It's just such a messy situation with these bad teams.
Agreed. When you had highlighted this, I was thinking, should I care about this? Like, am I that desperate? And with Leisure, I think he's on the borderline because he does have the wipeout ability at times, but it hasn't exactly translated with poor control. So I think he's, you know, a couple bucks, but I'm not going to be blowing crazy amounts to chase after him, even though he's worth a speculative ad, but I wouldn't go super high given the team context.
For the big thrill for me in fantasy, honestly, like once the season starts, it's the getting the guys a week ahead of time for pennies on the dollar. That's like the game, right? I love it. Part of what I do is I have to be, I have to put it out there fully, like in my articles, be fully transparent. Anyways, you probably know that I've been on the Jason Foley is going to get this closer job back in Detroit, because Bo Brisky's been horrible. Tommy Canley is good, but not your prototypical closer. And so I just saw a path for Foley, and I just kept kind of locking in on these like minor league numbers. Every time he went out there, it was a clean inning and a couple more strikeouts. His velo was down a little bit, but I just thought Jason Foley was going to come back and get his job back. He hadn't pitched for a couple games. Turns out he's got a shoulder injury. Doesn't seem like it's all that major, but he is now on the AAA injured list, MILB injured list. And so, yeah, whatever shares I have is a drop. Those that got him seems kind of wasted for now. And the Detroit situation remains, looks like Tommy Canley at the top.
That is the speculative ad, though, that I would rather do with the, you know, $1 to $10 bid on Foley. It didn't work out. Not a big deal. You have resolution on this and you can move on rather than spending the, you know, $100, $200 on Bender, and you don't have anything guaranteed with that. So I'm not spending that money.
And then just a quick note on how some players are doing. I mean, Tyler Soderstrom looks incredible. Like, just hit another home run literally as we began recording, his league leading ninth of the season. Tyler Soderstrom, I mean, we had him projected over 30 home runs. Other sites probably did if you looked at a plate appearance, per plate appearance type situation. But this is just like on another level. So the home runs that we thought Brent Rooker was going to be hitting, and he will hit them eventually. Like, Rooker will get streaky at some point. That'll happen. But really impressive. And it just goes to show, like, these corner infielders, like punting corner infielder and shopping in that range with, you know, him, Jonathan Aranda, who right now happens to be the major league leader. He's the only guy hitting over 400 in the majors. Like, it's just incredibly impressive. Like, Yandy Diaz is hitting 320. Michael Bush, Nathaniel Lowe, there's other guys, Nolan Shenwell, there are guys that are just hitting really, really well that were your like corner infielder, like past 200, past 250 ADP. Maybe that was kind of the sweet spot this year.
No, absolutely. I've seen some input that says whatever your priors were before the season, you shouldn't really change them much. And I do agree with that for the most part. But I think whenever a guy like Soderstrom comes out and does what he's doing, this kid just turned 23 6 months ago. Like, I think you can view him a lot differently now. With Aranda, my biggest concern with him was the playing time given the Rays can sometimes Ray, but their depth chart is very thin. So they're kind of forced into playing him. So I do think that certain guys we can have different perspective on if the role changes or if they just have exploded with their youth and their skill set. So yeah, I love these call outs.
I like that we didn't try to hedge when it came to these ballparks. Like everything starting with Sarah Sanchez's article in the FTN draft guide down through the podcasts and in our projections analysis, like all throughout the preseason, we were banging the drum of get these guys on the A's, get these guys on the Rays. These parks are going to play. And so far it's been explosive. And it's just April, right? It hasn't even warmed up. I keep talking about it. I'm from California. I went to school up at college up in Northern California. Like we know Sacramento. That place is going to get hot, 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 even in the late night. Like they try to do like their late night games. It'll be like a 7:30 Pacific start time. It's still going to be like in the 90s there at some days in the summer. It really is a thing. You think back to the 2021 season, I believe it was, when the Blue Jays played in Dunedin and then in another spot, right? And was it Buffalo?
Buffalo, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, there were four of their hitters ended up returning first round value. It's insane.
Absolutely. So I guess that means that it's going to be tough sledding for some of these pitchers to use your athletics pitchers. So yeah, that'll be interesting. We saw Pepio get a little bit blown up the other day. So it'll be a tough decision making when it heats up even further.
By the way, total side question. I know you're not a DFS player, but and this will probably come out by the time these games are going. But Taj in DFS, Taj Bradley is the chalk, chalk meaning going to be the most popular, like on this 5-game slate, and he's at home against the Yankees. How do you view something like that? I think it's part of the case is it's a slate where the pitching isn't really good. You're pretty much looking at a Tanner Bibee who's struggling on the road against Baltimore. It's like Lorenzen versus Olsen, Will Warren, Palante Canning, Kahanowitz and Kumar Rocker. Like it's a horrendous slate. Do you think the market is, or the DFS players are right going Bradley here, or do you think he's a fade?
I would say he's a fade. If the collective ownership is going to be extremely high, the odds that you win this tournament with Taj Bradley means that you selected the best plays at every single position versus if you just select the Yankees and they erupt, you're going to be in an advantage spot. That being said, I understand why he is chalky. He has good strikeout upside, but if I was playing this slate, I would stack up against him and hope that the Yankees can erupt, maybe even select some guys in the bottom of the order that aren't going to be as highly owned.
I like that because Judge will be popular, but yeah, there's something about it. Like I like Taj Bradley. I just don't necessarily love the spot. I don't know. We'll see. One of these other guys is going to it's going to be like Andre Pallante with a random gem or like Reese Olson bounces back. So we'll see here. Let's talk prospects, starting with a couple of guys that when we started putting together this outline for the show, they were not yet in the majors. And one of them already is, and he is one of the catchers for the Chicago White Sox. Edgar Caro is in the mix. So let's start with him. What are your thoughts on him? And as far as like 15 team viability, like does he have to do something this weekend to be on the map, or will people just pick him up because he's a prospect? But you know what? He's got a very high walk rate in the minors so far. He's got like a 444 on base percentage. I think like no homers. I think he hit 17 in the minors last year, so he's not completely dead weight. But then again, it's a White Sox. Are we even interested?
Yeah, I think you have to be interested in any two catcher formats, including 12-team leagues. I was putting together our stashing gritty earlier today, just doing a little bit of pre-work on there. And I noticed that like maybe 20-21% roughly of people that had Francisco Alvarez and Tyler Stevenson were using him. that means that they wanted to have an extra bench spot and not put in, you know, the dregs of the catching world like Freddie Fermin or whatever. So obviously, Caro is going to get a big bid. I think based on the time of the year too, people want to quote unquote fix their teams and they have a bunch of money burning a hole in their pocket. I love the fact that he was called up fast. Obviously the White Sox have plenty of holes. They can use both him and Teal whenever he's ready as the catcher and DH and maybe even implement one of those guys at first base. So yeah, I would advise a solid bid just based on the fact that the position's so bad and he is a good prospect. He's not one of the elite guys, but he's a very credible prospect.
Yeah, I'm in OCCLQ. I've been playing Tyler Stevenson this week on IL. Like, I don't want to. It's just kind of the way things shook out. Lost, yeah. And Andy Rodriguez had to drop him. I'm like, ah, I'm not going to. These spots are so valuable. And so I don't know if I can do it another week because Tyler Stevenson's probably about 5 to 10 days away from returning. But yeah, Edward Kiro, he is up. And that team just keeps moving things around. Chase Meidroth is now, or Meidroth, after I looked at the pronunciation guide, has joined the team. He's like a 17% in the minors walk rate guy. He had been hitting fifth and sixth since he was called up last week. And he moved up to first. He got to lead off there. Andrew Benintendi's back with them. And I mean, yeah, I just see Carroll getting run. They cut Omar Narvaez, the old vet who they had up for a couple of days to get him in there. Corey Lee still on the IL. And then Matt Tice is just like whatever, right? Like he had been getting playing time because they hadn't called the kids up yet and because Corey Lee was hurt. But Matt Tice was even playing more than Corey Lee when Corey Lee was healthy. So that's something worth noting. So yeah, you're right. I do like Edward Kiro. We probably all could use a catcher unless you want catcher early. The more interesting thing here is, and this kind of sucks for those that were actually looking to bid on him because you could see the writing on the wall here because Oliver Dunn's been done for quite some time. But Caleb Durbin is getting the call. So that's going to be one of the hot guys this week, right?
I think so. You know, you look at the end of the season over the last few years with the new rules and you see these random guys jumping up like Caballero. I know you're a huge fan. So maybe he's not random to you, but just these guys where they have these monster steal totals and that could easily be Durbin. He was listed in Dan Thompson's article as a potential guy that could just erupt for the bags. And if some teams went pitching heavy or power heavy, they're going to need this guy. He's on a team that likes to play small ball. So they're going to be willing to run. He doesn't have a huge bat or anything. In fact, I question his bat, but I think he's definitely going to be a fascinating guy if you're in need of steals.
Is and just the way the lineup shakes out, I mean, looks like he's going to be at the bottom of the order, but will he be platooning with Vinny Capra, do you think? Or because Capra hits the lefties. Durbin was platooning right in the very beginning, but he is also a righty.
It's hard to say definitively, but I think that they're going to want to get him off the ground and get him rolling. I mean, he was one of the key assets in return for Devin Williams. So I think that kind of thing is a little arbitrary, but I think that is key. When teams make these trades for a big star player, they want to, you know, introduce that guy to the team and get him rolling, get him on the assembly line and cooking. So yeah, I like Durbin as an ad this week, even though the power is very weak. And his average could be low, but he definitely can run.
Yeah, and I like how Brewers manager there is like kind of managing that lineup and just really maximizing things. Like when there's a lefty up, Bryce Terang, he goes and he hits ninth as he should, but he's still in the lineup. He still has a presence there, and it's worth him being there. And then Bryce Terang gets to lead off against the righties. Jackson Churio then, you know, gets a hit first against lefties, usually second against the righties. Then you got Yelich and Contreras there. Sal Frelick is off to a tremendous start. And now Rhys Hoskins is starting to pick things up. You knew he was going to start hitting bombs at some point. Garrett Mitchell, Joey Ortiz really haven't gotten going yet. But this is a good offense. If they can figure things out with the pitching, and they do, they seem like they are, as a matter of fact. Like we'll talk about a couple of these guys, but Quinn Priester's was acquired and he gave up no hits in his first outing there, that last one. Jose Quintana joined the team and healthy now. He's got two starts. They got Brandon Woodruff on the way back. They've got Tobias Myers on the way back. I guess Aaron Ashby is already starting to rehab a little bit. And then eventually Nestor Cortez, Savale, not that good. Robert Gasser when he recovers from Tommy John. So this is not a bad squad at all.
Not at all. This is always that team that figures out a way to kind of win this division, even though their payroll is minuscule compared to the big dogs.
All right. Those are those guys. Caleb Durbin, Edward Caro, definitely guys to track for Fab. Let's talk about some guys that are not yet up. And let's start with the one that everybody's talking about, getting questions for this for a couple of weeks. Like the second Brett Rooker got that first outfield game and everybody's talking about Nick Kurtz. And there was even some talk of Soderstrom, like playing a little third base and, you know, getting some reps there. And it's all for this kid, Nick Kurtz. My question to you is, and, you know, you as a prospect guy, I know you also know how to approach these things from both sides of it. Like just because it's a prospect and just because he's been crushing in the minors doesn't mean he's just going to come up and just all of a sudden crush. But Nick Kurtz, I just have a feeling, is going to be incredibly popular. Like the buzz around him in the fantasy community now, I understand he's like, you know, leading the minors in homers and RBI and all that. And then he's going to go in this amazing hitters park if he does come up. But there's also the, you know, the possibility that he does struggle, kind of like Cam Smith did off the bat. So what's your thoughts on him? What makes him, give us like more than just the fantasy thing. What is it about Nick Kurtz that makes him like really special?
Yeah. So with Kurtz, I do think he was the best hitter in the draft last year. And I think he was the best hitting prospect in the first year player draft. He's more of a polished hitter than Jack Caglione, but his power is not as elite. Caglione can potentially hit the ball freaking 120 miles an hour. Well, almost no humans can do that. So that's special for Caglione. Kurtz, on the other hand, he's more of your safe and steady Eddie guy. He's the guy, he's the prospect that a Dave Potts would go for rather than the risky guy. That being said, he does have health concerns as far as he gets injured a lot. But I think in a, you know, as far as the redraft setup, it is playing out for him to potentially come up quickly, maybe even, you know, this month, maybe early May. Like you had said, he's scorching the ball with a 60% hard hit rate. Plate discipline's really strong. So he's very well-rounded. Health issues are really the only concern with him. And he's clearly been fast-tracked starting out his first full pro season in AAA. That's pretty wild as well.
Yeah, fourth overall pick in the draft. Got a $7 million signing bonus. So yeah, he's he'll fit right in on that team. Hope you have a lot of A's because it's that's just a good year to have athletics there. Augustin Ramirez for the Marlins, somebody I targeted, drafted, have sitting there waiting in the wings. And I mean, listen, I'm not expecting anything massive, but he was the big prospect in the Jazz Chisholm deal. And I mean, I thought maybe he might make the team from the start. I think there were maybe some concerns about his defense and just getting him sort of major league ready. He did, you know, play the full season pretty much in, or almost the full season. I don't know, 2/3 of it in AAA last year and looked pretty good for the most part. But this is a catcher who can steal bases. He stole 22 bases in the minors last year, hit in the mid 260s with a 360 OBP. And then so far this year, he's has four steals and has not been caught stealing yet. So though he did hit 25 homers and 93 RBIs in the minors last year, the power has been a little bit slow to come up on this year. And, you know, the Marlins called up Rob Brantley when I think Nick Fortes went down. They have Rule 5 pick Liam Hicks. They're just kind of, you know, treading water there. But what's the timing for somebody like Augustin Ramirez? Because I don't feel like it's necessarily him being hot at the plate and they have to force him up, right? Like, what else is there that I might be missing?
No, I think you're on point. I think this is a really good hitting catcher. And he has the ability to steal bags. He's proven that multiple years now. And like you said, he was the prize of the Jazz Chisholm trade. So that's going to incentivize them even further to show something to their fans. This has been a tough rebuild. It's been a nasty rebuild. They've got a really bad lineup. But if they can introduce him that could be huge. You know, with Liam Hicks, he was a Rule 5 draft pick. So if they get rid of him, he'll have to be returned. So they're going to want to hold on to him as long as possible, but they also want to get Augustin some experience and see what he can do with the big league pitching staff as a catcher, as well as against big league pitching. So on the stash and gritty, not to repeatedly mention that over and over again, I do like him. I have him ahead of a guy like Dalton Rushing and Kyle Teal, just because I think the playing time is clear. He can get it. He's a much better hitter than almost anyone in their org. He's one of their best hitters in this system, and he's a clear path to PT. So I think he's a guy that I would be very excited about once he gets the call.
And for those that don't know what the stash and gritty is, if you probably know that Lucas writes his week ahead article that comes out every Monday, looking at the top offenses, the worst offenses for the upcoming week, talking about some showing some platoon splits, some of the things that used to be in my article last year. Lucas has taken over, but he's got this cool thing that is basically like this chart that he maintains that basically is players that are stashable, worth stashable, and sort of like a grade on them. So it's very cool. Check that out. We like to call things gritties here. That's just, that sounds better. Talk to me about Braxton Fulford, because I didn't know anything about this kid until I saw him in the Rockies lineup, and he was hitting ninth. He's the catcher. He's actually the third catcher on their roster right now because Hunter Goodman's still there. Jacob Stallings is there. But Braxton Fulford was off to a tremendous start. He had 5 bombs in his first 12 games, with a .395 average, nearly a .500 OBP. What's up with this kid? And could he stick around, or is he just here for the week?
I'm going to be honest. Whenever I read the outline this morning, I had never heard of this guy. Looked him up in my trusted Baseball America prospect handbook. He's not inside their top 30, so he's not viewed as much of a prospect necessarily, but he is stinging the ball with an incredible hard hit rate. He plays in Coors Field, so if he's getting any playing time, he'll be bid on maybe a couple bucks. You don't have to go too much because he's not much of a name, but sometimes this happens in baseball. That's the cool thing is that these random guys get going. Hey, if you get a week or two out of him, spend a couple bucks, not the end of the world. So I'm glad that we are at least put him on people's radars to mention his name.
Yeah, because it's not just like one of these rotating Rockies outfielders, right? Because Brenton Doyle has not gone on the IL, but he's pretty much missed the week. And, you know, Zach Veen is up there. Sean Bouchard still on the roster, pretty much just playing against lefties. But they had to get his bat in the lineup there against a righty just because they really need some outfield help. And now you got Mickey Moniak playing every day in center field, which is interesting. And then with the catchers now, like Hunter Goodman, he's in that lineup every day. He's either DHing or he's catching. And then Jacob Stallings seems like he's fading out. I mean, he's 35. He's played twice in the last week. And so I don't know. I mean, don't know the contract situation with Stallings, but I don't think it's easy to just cut a vet like that or whatever, but I don't know, something to watch. But we don't really know here as we record on this Thursday. We don't know what the major league fate is of Braxton Fulford in the next 3 days. Let's talk about Juan Brito, somebody that we actually had kind of high up in the projections. I personally was expecting something like 250, 350 plate appearances, and maybe he gets there. This Cleveland offense, as I was writing gut feelings, I realized, like, I mean, it's nothing to realize. We all kind of know it. It's kind of dead. It's like dead here, man. It's not a good offense whatsoever. They got acquired Lane Thomas at the trade deadline. He's been hurt, not running, just an awful addition so far. Kyle Manzardo got off to that blistering start, and what was it, 1 or 2 games? Since then, he's hitting like .120. So I still like the kid. I think he'll be fine. But outside of Jose Ramirez, this lineup is kind of horrible. And Jose Ramirez has single-digit RBI, which is, at this point of the season, guys of his ilk, you're usually, Aaron Judge got like triple that or something. So it is concerning what's going on in Cleveland. They always kind of find a way to get there, but they may not this year. But this Juan Brito is off to a nice start. He's a middle infielder. What are your thoughts on him, and what's the path to him joining the majors?
Yeah, he's your typical Cleveland prospect. They have an absolute type they go for. after they hit on Lindor. They really go for these hit tool guys that have athletic ability to stay at shortstop or even move around the diamond. And these guys usually don't give much power. And I'm worried that Brito's the same way. As far as, you know, his max exit velocity, he's barely cracked 108, and his hard hit rates are in the very low 30s, typically. Not saying that he can't be a good player with those aspects to him, but that just makes it a harder path to climb and less likely that he can even hit 5 to 10 home runs. So I think he's a player that, you know, if he does get a call up, he's worth a look, but you're going to want to temper your expectations, in my opinion.
Yeah, Juan Brito so far hitting .320, two homers, four stolen bases in 14 games. And you're right. Like, it's kind of a type there. You're looking at this, you know, the guys like Angel Martinez and Gabriel Arias and Brian Rocchio, you know, that
Tyler Freeman
used to be there. Yeah. I mean, Jonkenzie Knoll, that guy hits bombs against lefties, but he doesn't even play, like, just pretty much only against lefties. So he doesn't really kind of fit in to that offense. And then Steven Kwan, of course, the poster boy there, he's doing great work there at the top of the lineup. So Lucas says nothing crazy there. Dodgers prospects, obviously there's Dalton Rushing, who might still be in the minors when he's like 37, with the way things are going there. And then my boy, Hyesung Kim, still waiting for him to get called up. He's hitting .284, three homers, four stolen bases. So a little bit of the power, nice to see. He was sent down to the minors after signing in the KBO and having a decent spring because he completely changed his plate approach and his stance. And so they wanted him to work on that and just get acclimated to the States in the minor leagues. And he's been doing just that. So he's also been playing some center field and some outfield, which is good to note because hard worker Andy Pyes is not hitting well at all. He's getting there, you know, here and there, but pretty much slumping for the most part. That could be a move that could be made. I would love to see it. And he's a guy that's on my radar, obviously, when he gets called up.
Yeah, these are all good guys to at least have an understanding of who they are. I think, like you said, with Dalton Rushing, Hyesung Kim, they would probably be regulars on any other team outside of this one. Alex Freeland is another one that I think could potentially enter in the fold, but it's no telling when any of these players are going to get a chance just with how stuffed this roster is with talent. So yeah, I think that potentially with all these players, except for Kim, he has the contract already. So you probably will see him at some point soonest. I think that they're more likely to be playing for another team rather than the Dodgers, just based on the fact they could make a trade.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Hyesung Kim would be playing right now if he signed with the Mariners, as was expected. But unfortunately, also, the Dodgers are in a position where they have a bench where the average age is 35. It's Austin Barnes, Miguel Rojas, Kike Hernandez, and then Chris Taylor, who's, I don't want to peg him as like the Anthony Rendon because he's not. He actually likes baseball. He would like to play. He's just not good enough, but he's just got this massive contract. They can't just cut him without a major loss. They also don't care about the money, but he's, you know, what played one, he plays once a week. That's about it. And Andy Pyes is like, he's just okay. I don't think he's great. I think Hyesung Kim there in the lineup also gets them some flexibility with Tommy Edman, because Tommy Edman can then move back to the outfield if they need to. Hyesung Kim and him can both play second and outfield. So we'll see about that. Last hitter, big one. Roman Anthony, we've been talking about it since the minors. He's just too good for them right now. 65% hard hit rate. This is a small sample, but it's just funny to see a 99 mile per hour exit velocity. he's sitting, you know, he's 283, 441 on base percentage. But is there a role for him? Like, how does he even get in there? And maybe is it that Boston just slumps enough where, you know, we saw them get crushed by the, you know, freaking White Sox. And then what, score no runs? Was it a 1-0 shutout, or they won 1-0 against Tampa in Tampa, or, you know, in that small park? So what is the deal with Roman Anthony? Cause I got shares stacked and I want to get him in there,
man. I want to get him in there too. And, I was really excited about this guy. He is, I would argue he's the number one prospect in the game right now. As far as, you know, when this playing time comes, this roster is very loaded. I really think there would probably need to be an injury. That being said, the cool thing about the way that this roster was configured is guys can move around a little bit with Rafaela having that. And Rafaela, I think, is going to be moved into less playing time at some point. I'm not going to say he's a part-time guy because I wouldn't view it that way, but I think he could, you know, sit multiple days per week. I think that at this point, Anthony's going to need an injury just based on the names on this roster ahead of him and the track records these guys have.
That makes sense. Any other hitters you want to touch on? I had just mentioned the speed plays, right? Like the guys like Chandler Simpson, who, you know, stole 100 bags, and he's hitting 297 with 11 stolen bases. Right now, Cameron Misner, who actually is leading off as on Thursday, or projected to lead off, and Jake Mangum are actually playing there, and they're doing all right. So not quite sure when Simpson will be up. Jonathan Klasai, for the Blue Jays, he's got 6 stolen bases hitting 380 in for Toronto, and they keep playing guys like Nathan Lukes and Addison Barger, and, you know, just a bunch of whatever. So I think maybe there's a path there. And then old friend Luis Camposano hitting 378 with 3 home runs in the PCL. I don't know how his defense is going, but I'd like to see him up there for Martin Maldonado at some point.
A lot of great notes. There was one guy that I did want to mention. He's no longer a prospect, but he graduated a few years ago. Spencer Horowitz is a guy that's on his rehab assignment right now, nice. Or he's about to be. He's very low owned in the main event at only 19%. He has the first base, second base eligibility, and the Pirates are desperate for better hitters. And they sought him out in a trade where they gave up Luis Ortiz. So I think he's a nice little stash. Add him in. He's not going to light the world on fire, but in a 15-team league, he gets the job done.
I hope he comes shooting out of a cannon there in Pittsburgh. That's just what they need. So that would be nice. I am also a big Spencer Horowitz fan, and hope he does good things there in Pittsburgh. Real quick, just a touch on these pitchers, and I'm going to throw out their stats because they're all very similar. But I'm curious when you think any of them might be up. You've got Zebby Matthews there for the Minnesota Twins. I had not checked if any of these guys pitched on Wednesday as we record here on Thursday. But Zebby Matthews, his first 3 starts, an ERA under 2, 20 strikeouts. Bubby Chandler, top pitching prospect for the Pirates. Same thing. One ERA under 2 in 3 starts, 18 strikeouts. So those are kind of the top 2 guys. And then 2 others that have been on our radars through draft champion season. They literally have all the same stats, except for Ian Seymour of Tampa has like a whole bunch more Ks. So Ian Seymour of Tampa and then Noah Cameron of the Royals. Looking at these rotations, what sort of, like, I don't want to say like what's the order of them coming up, but like who's most likely to come up soon and who's most likely to have like the most fantasy value all season?
Yeah, so I think the answer to that question is the same guy. I think Bubba Chandler is the one that comes up faster than anyone else on this list. Number one pitching prospect on most evaluators' list, and I do agree with that, given the fact we don't know what Andrew Painter is going to look like. He's been a few years since he's been on the mound. But I think that he's going to come up by mid-May, hopefully sooner. I do have him stashed in a few spots, thankfully. But as far as Matthews, you had mentioned him. He was surpassed in the organization's eyes by David Festa, since Festa got the start when Pablo Lopez will be on a quick IL trip. So I think he not only has to pass up Festa, but Pablo Lopez is coming back. So I think for me, like Zebby Matthews being 98% owned in the main event, to me, that's just a little bit too high. I don't think he's must own necessarily, although he is a decent stash. I just think people are a bit zealous there. We can talk about the other guys too, if you want.
Yeah. I mean, any of them that you've been sort of following, tracking, targeting in Dynasty between Noah Cameron and Ian Seymour?
Cameron would be my preferred option. There's a lot less starter depth on most teams than Tampa. A guy like Joe Boyle isn't even guaranteed a job or provided a job there. So he's got some hurdles of guys that he has to jump over there, even though Seymour is a good changeup first prospect. He'll have a solid future. But Cameron is in the team that has the thinner rotation, especially if they suffer any injuries. So I think Cameron was a really good name to mention here. He's not going to be called up immediately or anything, but he'll be a guy to keep stowed away.
All right. Let's talk some weekend matchups. And we're going into the weekend here. There's going to be some rain. There are going to be some rain outs. There are going to be some lots of shifting. By the way, the MLB projections at FTN, the custom tool, we are grinding in that thing. Me, Jenny Butler, and Dan Thompson, we are like updating every time somebody goes on the IL or pitcher change. Like, we are trying to keep it as fresh as possible, get you the fresh daily, weekly, or the Monday through Thursday, Friday through Sunday splits as soon as we can. Rest of season projections are going to launch within that tool. I'm told sometime this weekend, which is also going to be great news, help you with trade analysis and other things like that. So looking ahead to the weekend, of course, definitely look at our MLB rankings and projections there to help guide you. But another prospect, Brandon Young of the Baltimore Orioles, he's going to make his debut, his start against the Cincinnati Reds. Talk to me about him and potential sticking.
Yeah, Brandon Young is an older prospect. He's going to turn 27 later on this summer, but I think he's in a prime position. He's not a big stuff guy per se. He's more of a command guy with a kitchen sink arsenal. So maybe like a worse version of like a Fetty or a Tyone if he is able to stick in the big leagues. But I do actually like him a lot as a speculative, cheap 15-team ad, not necessarily a 12-team guy. But last year in the minor leagues, he had a 20.5 strikeout minus walk rate, which would be very good, and a 13.6% swinging strike rate, nearly 30% CSW. So for me, this is a guy that's not going to have a big name. He's in a tough division, but if you can get him on your team for a reasonable amount, I think he's a guy that could be solid in some matchups.
By the way, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned CSW, and that's the caught strikes plus whiffs. That was created by Nick Pollock and Alex Fast, kind of helped explain it years ago in an article. But is that something you look at a lot? That rate stat, because I think it is a good one. But I noticed you mentioned it. Is that something that you recommend people use?
Yeah, for me, it's one of my favorite stats because certain guys succeed in different ways. You have guys that just are unhittable, get a lot of swinging strikes. Then you have other players that just pound the zone with, you know, a low walk rate. So you're going to be able to reward both types of players. Whenever a pitcher has a low CSW, it does concern me some. But then sometimes guys can do that and they're really good. Just like Blake Snell, like I started using ball percentage a few years back and Blake Snell's horrible in ball percentage. So I faded him. It's like, well, that was dumb. This guy can get away with certain things. So there's no one size fits all, but I think it's a good tool to have in your toolbox.
All right, we got JT Ginn. Ginn, man, just when I thought I memorized the pronunciation guide, that pops up. He's going to make his second start against the Milwaukee Brewers. Probably going to stick around in this rotation. It's like it is for most pitchers, going to be a little bit of a bumpy road. But he went for an average of, I think it was $37 in main events. Picked up pretty much everywhere there. Talk to me about Tanner Houck. What's been going on with him? Because we saw him give up 10 earned runs in a minor league start. I'm sorry, not a minor league start, in a spring training start, the last one before the season started. And I think it impacted his draft price where people were like, oh, maybe he's not all that safe because he's kind of been on the, you know, doesn't strike out many guys, but just had such nice ratios last year, a team that'll give you wins. And he just felt like one of those like safe guys. But then he wrecked ratios very badly earlier this week, and now he gets a start against the White Sox on Sunday. What is somebody to do in like a daily league in a head-to-head? It's, you know, have you dug into his start or his numbers or his velo or anything that can maybe hint towards an injury or something different or something like wrong with him? Like, what's going on with Tanner Houck? Because it's weird.
You know, this is tough. This is a guy that I have on three of my 15 teams, and I absorbed every bit of that damage that he gave. Given it was a two-start week, that made me feel like I had to do it in a competitive roto league. You know, he's not ever been a bat misser, but he only became effective when he introduced that sweeper, since he has kind of the sinker and the splitter. And, you know, he's like 60%, he's like a 55% ground ball rate for his career. So I did like him heading into this year at the right price. It's tough. I think at this point he is pretty unusable in formats, even in 15 teams. I would bench him next week unless it's a DC and you're going to put in, you know, a fifth inning reliever. I'd probably keep him in there. in a DC.
What if you're in a daily league, or you're in a head-to-head daily league where you're kind of close there, and he's got the start on Sunday against the White Sox? Do you roll with it? Does he bounce back, or do you sit it? That's a tough question, huh?
Yeah, I think in most cases I would honestly sit it, because he does look pretty messed up. He's been a good pitcher. I mean, last season in the first half, he was one of the better pitchers in the majors. And as we all know, he had that poor second half. I do still think there's a good player here, but he's certainly kind of going through it. So probably bench him unless your ratio is already shot for the week.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Lucas and I obviously operate a lot differently. We have different paths to success. I am a glutton for punishment, so I would probably start it, knowing that it's probably the wrong move. So do as I recommend, not as I necessarily do.
Yeah, I do think in the 15s, though, I just don't know. I can't start him next week.
Yeah,
it's going to be too tough.
That makes sense, no matter what he does against the White Sox on Sunday. Jackson Jobe, Cole Reagans, a nice a matchup on Friday, as long as the weather's okay. Some pitching duels with the Dodgers and the Rangers over the weekend. This will be fun. Yamamoto have an incredible season so far this year. Him against Jacob deGrom on Friday, Roki Sasaki and Nathan Eovaldi on Saturday, and then Tyler, the battle of the Tylers, Tyler Glasnow and current Cy Young candidate, right? Tyler Mahle. What's going on there, man? That's pretty impressive, huh?
Yeah, I honestly had him in a couple of my dynasty leagues, and we have unlimited IL, so I've just had him free of charge for a few years. Heading into this draft season, I had no interest in him. I cut him from the dynasty leagues. He's off my radar, and now he's blowing up again, so I'm happy for him personally, but given all the surgeries and the delay from the Tommy John, I'm a bit surprised that he's doing so well.
And once again, just been butchering his name for years. Of course, it's Mail. Mail. Tyler Mail. All right. Another thing I wanted to ask you here on the weekend matchups is Mackenzie Gore. The Nationals are going to Coors. I believe there might be some weather issues there in Colorado. And so Mackenzie Gore has been, sort of strikeouts have been there, but so have been the runs. It's kind of par for the course for him and what he does there. But what are your thoughts on Mackenzie Gore, how he will fare in Coors Field this week?
Man, it's anyone's guess. We were talking about in the Discord as far as, starting your pitchers that you drafted within your first four, maybe five pitchers that you drafted. I'm a firm believer that you leave those guys in there unless you just have some all-star team in a 12-team league or something. And with Gore, I think you keep rolling him out there every time. I mean, he blanked the Phillies on opening day, 13 Ks, was looking like this guy was going to be a contender for Cy Young, and then he gets blown up a little bit in his next few starts. Take the good with the bad. I think you leave him in there and roll with it.
The offense is so bad there with the Rockies.
That's true.
I think you just roll with it. Nationals with three in Coors, obviously you're starting all those guys for the weekend in NFBC. If you're in a DC and you're absolutely hurting, Nassim Nunez got a little speed. He's going to start at shortstop while CJ Abrams is out. Trey Lipscomb, remember him? I think he's still like three bases in a game or something. That's pretty much all he's done. up for Paul DeJong. And then the Reds, they're going to be in Baltimore. They just got a very crazy game on Thursday. It was, I think they had like a 7-4 lead. Then they had a lead, whatever. Anyways, they ended up losing the game by a run, but it was just like really messy. The bullpen is not good at all. I think it was even Emilio Pagan, who's supposed to be their closer now, was the one gave up some runs. But they just lost Christian Encarnacion Strand to the IL. Guy really seems to be kind of not jinx, but just, I don't know, something. Noelvi Marte, who was just demoted, was called back up for the move. But you're going to probably see some more playing time for Jaime Candelario, who just has not been good. And neither has Spencer Steer, who I don't think is fully healthy. Gavin Lux, by the way, looks like an all-star so far for the Reds. But it's Friedel, Matt McClain, Ellie De La Cruz, and Gavin Lux. And then it's really bad after that for the Reds.
Yeah, I did mention this in the week ahead, that this is an offense that's been really poor. The only two must-start guys that I listed were TJ Friedel and Ellie De La Cruz. Since McClain was on the injured list, obviously when he's healthy, you're going to put him in there. But the other guys, I do think you need to evaluate as far as moving forward. Austin Hayes looks good. What's your take on Noelvi Marte? What are you thinking with his playing time, given the fact he did have that job last year when he came back, got a lot of burn. So what's your take?
I don't know how long he'll be up for. I think the fact that they demoted him after him not really getting much playing time, what was it, last weekend, he hit against a lefty, then against a righty. I don't know, right? This is kind of his chance. I'm not a huge fan, but I think you're going to start to see his bat get in there. I really don't know. I don't have a very strong take on him, but I don't think he's someone I'm going to be bidding on this weekend.
Former first overall pick in one NFBC league. So.
That's right. The infamous. Never forget. Hey, listen, that guy avoided Acuna, so it was kind of a wash. All right. Let's wrap things up here with a look ahead. I'm going to be starting my fab work on Friday, and those bid lists will be up for 15 teamers and 12 teamers. So I just had a quick glance at some of these guys. Obviously, Caleb Durbin is on the map. In 15 team main events, he's available in about 65% of them. Believe he was drafted in every league, so don't quote me on that. We already mentioned Alex Verdugo and Brooks Lee, and then, of course, Edouard Julien, back from the dead. The guy was persona non grata there in Minnesota. He's been leading off and hitting really well over the last week and a half. He's available in about 40% of mains. So there are those hitters. So I want to ask you, anyone stand out there? We kind of already talked about Durbin. Anyone I missed? And then a couple of pitchers, and we'll just take the 15 teamers all in one. But you've got Dean Kramer, who I, for whatever reason, never trust, never like, but he's coming off a really nice start. He's available in about 40% of main events. He gets the Nationals and the Tigers, both games on the road. That's what he's slated for next week right now. And then there's Randy Vasquez. He's available in almost 70% of main events. Not a high strikeout pitcher, usually gets some run support, but he's going up against the Tigers on the road, and then he gets the Rays at home. So let's talk about 15 team guys.
Yeah, with Kramer, I do have him in a DC or two, and I've been wanting to not use him. He's looked really bad so far. He doesn't get much strikeouts, but the matchups are very weak. Washington has CJ Abrams on the injured list. They have Dylan Cruz in La La Land because he's not ready. And if you're willing to be risky, like if you would have used a guy like Michael Lorenzen for his two start, or if you would have used a guy like Jake Irvin for his two start, I think you can give it a chance, but you have to realize there's significant downside. So it's all about your willingness to take a risk or not with Dean Kramer. And similar for Randy Vasquez. I'm not a huge fan of him, but you're giving yourself a chance for some strikeouts and stuff with him. But these guys, as we saw with Hauk and with Charlie Morton, they can burn you pretty bad.
Yeah. And I mean, Kramer has got like kind of the bigger blow up ability. I think, like a guy that can lay a bunch of runs out on you. But again, this is not in Baltimore. These are the two starts on the road against basically bottom of the barrel offenses right now. And then Randy Vasquez, I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to do a little bit of homework, because part of it is just not just the numbers, it's the feel of it. And then we'll also see if they end up being on Mike Mager's drops and disasters.
That's true.
Anyone else that we missed in the 15 sphere?
I think a guy like Brooks Lee, you had talked about adding a guy kind of before the public's on him. Two guys that I wrote down before I started my fab last week that unfortunately I just didn't have a spot for him, or it just didn't happen, was Adale Amador. I was looking at him and I didn't go that route. And Brooks Lee. Well, with Brooks Lee, there's an opportunity opened up for him with Wallner on the IL, and they're shifting puzzle that Rocco Baldelli runs. So I like Brooks Lee as a, not an exciting name, but just a decent compiler potentially. And Caleb Durbin is another one with Edouard Julien. This is an interesting little kind of mini list. It's not an exciting list, but there's some contributors, I think.
And then wrap things up with the 12 teamers. I'm going to just, the hitters, a lot of guys are sometimes dropped off cold weeks. I think somebody like, hey, listen, maybe somebody dropped Christian Walker in your league. I mean, that's a huge get. Someone in our OC, CLQ, league with Phil and a whole bunch of other good players. Somebody dropped Nick Castellanos.
Wow. And I think
Chef Mike picked them up for like 200 something. So they're, you know, the whenever someone sees like the 100% rostered owned player, it's like, you know, a lot of people are like, I got to get that. Got to have it. By the way, Gausman was dropped actually by Phil because he has just like the biggest, like he's just got like 12 pitchers and they're all great. So he had to cut someone and he made for somebody to spend $200 on Gausman. I think I put in a healthy like 130, but wasn't even close. And so, you know, the hitters are always will be someone there, but the pitchers, usually it's a similar case. Usually we do not have to play in this world of, you know, guys that are not really available in 15s, but they might be dicey to start for two starts in 12s. So I'm just going to throw them out to you and then you tell me what you think. One is Brian Bello. He's available in nearly 70% of OCs. He's getting a little bit of extra attention if you watch the Clubhouse, the Red Sox show. You know, it actually a very, very great watch. One of the best things I've watched in a long time. Absolutely love the show. I absolutely love Tyler O'Neill there. The guy is just like super
human. What a shock.
Dude, all he does is hit. Like he's just in his batting cage at home with his wife throwing him balls, you know, like behind the net with like the baby on the outside of that, you know, fence. It scares me on the outside of the net. But anyways, he's a beast. But Brian Bello would get at Seattle and home Cleveland if it happens to line up that way. So you got him. You got Osvaldo Beto for the A's. And this one's tough. It's he's coming off. He's been decent this year, but in his last start, he had no strikeouts. He gets home Texas and home White Sox. You got Mitchell Parker, two home starts, Baltimore and the Mets. And then let's start with those three, and then we'll pair the last two together.
Yeah, Bello is actually a guy. He's actually available in a main event. I'm going to be intrigued to see how much that dude goes for in a main event league. I can't believe he's actually out there. I added him in my... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, you say intrigued how much he will go for. Does that mean you're not going heavy?
No.
Or you don't want to say... You don't have to give up your...
No, it's fine. A pitcher like him in a main event league, like I feel like people are going to go crazy for him. And over $200, I mean, I think in a competitive main event league, like that could be a very reasonable amount if you get a matchup-based guy that can give you some upside. So, yeah, if he was out there in my 15-team league, I'd be fairly aggressive.
All right, and any thoughts for if it was Beto on the road, I'd feel a little better about it. I feel like I'm going to start him in my 15-teamer where I have him, but I don't feel as confident in 12 in April.
Yeah, like you said, being – at Sacramento, too risky for me. In a 15-teamer, you can have a conversation about it, although you're going in eyes wide open. Mitchell Parker is not good enough to use against teams that are going to make the playoffs, like Baltimore, or not Baltimore, won't make the playoffs, but New York, not going to do it. But Bello is he's a must-add in all formats. I think even in a 10-team league, you can add him and use him in these starts.
Did you just jinx the Mets, say that they're going to make the playoffs? I mean,
for some reason, I still have a ton of respect for Baltimore, even though their pitching's falling apart. They have a lot of good hitters on that team, and just can't do it with Mitchell Parker. Too fringy.
Yeah, it makes sense. These last two guys are really interesting. One was actually both were recommended last week by yours truly. Jose Quintana. Of course, I got beat out in a league I wanted him by John Posma, and. He's available in 84% of NFBC OCs, the 12 team. And then Quinn Priester, who did not give up a hit last time out. He is somebody who was a top prospect with the Pirates, struggled when he was in the majors, then went to Boston, and Boston let him go. He went shipped him off to Milwaukee. They just guess didn't have space for him, but he made some very noticeable changes in the offseason, higher velocity. And he's looked really, really good so far. So both of them available between, you know, basically in most 12 teamers, they will both, everything, weather permitting, would line up for road two steps at San Francisco against the Giants and at St. Louis against the Cardinals. What do you think?
Man, these are right on the borderline where you're questioning to use them in an OC, which means they're an option. It's someone like Beto or Parker are fairly easy cross-offs in this exercise. With Priester, he's a more of a kitchen sink guy. He does have a lot of different pitches and he can spin the ball, but he's unproven. So I'm not going to go that route. A little bit too much risk for me. Quintana, been around forever. You know what you're going to get. You're not going to get a lot of Ks, but he has enough length. He could give you a win. Probably won't give you two, but you can hope for it. So Quintana is one that if I was in a pinch, had a weak pitching staff, I'd be willing to give him a chance.
Yeah, Quinn Priester is actually available in 19% of main events, so he was not scooped up everywhere last week. I think there's also was the concern, and actually might still be. I don't know why I'm just looking at the schedule for next week and knowing when I work. I mean, we're literally working within projecting lineups, and we're watching pitching changing every single day, and knowing that Tobias Myers is back next week and Brandon Woodruff might be back in 2 weeks, and all it takes is a one bad Priester start. He doesn't get that two start. He might get, you know, back to the, we just don't know. It's the beauty of this. It's the constant flux of everything. We're taking this day by day, and it's really why it's just hard when somebody asks me, like, you know, what do you think rest of season, you know, the player X, player Y.
Right.
It's really tough. And I feel like it's a disservice if I'm answering the question when I'd rather be honest and be like, you know what, in this case, I actually don't know, just because a lot can happen. It's not like I'm trying to punt the question. Hey, listen, the good thing is a model that's smarter than humans is about to be here this weekend. And you can use the rest of season projections through the FTN model. It'll be fantastic. But, you know, those are just really sometimes hard questions to answer.
Yeah. And like you said, like when you're looking at these players with and you're using you're trying to figure out exactly that Monday two starter is going to be so much more likely to get that second start rather than your Tuesday guy where it just takes one rain out. And a lot of these Sunday two starts, they don't even happen. So, I mean, you need to just think it could happen, but you can't guarantee it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Tyler Alexander, perfect example. Pitched on a Monday, got blasted. And then next day it's like, oh, he's moved back to the bullpen. But those of us paying attention, you almost can see it's that extra step. Like I kind of kicked myself. I didn't actually land on him, but I was like, wait, why did I recommend him when knowing that, first of all, these are two kind of tough starts. And then also all these guys are coming back. Like I, need to kind of be careful with that sort of thing. Anything else going to wrap up the show here? Anything else that like you wanted to touch on or rant about or shout out or anything here?
Yeah, one last thing, and it's kind of related to my Monday two starters versus the Tuesday two start pitcher guys. Like just taking that extra little bit of time. I've, listened to podcasts over the years. I've heard so many NFBC players say, when I was able to spend more time, I had more success, or I got a more demanding job, my success went down. It's definitely a bit of a grind, but if you're going to spend that, extra bit of time, the Nationals offense, they don't have CJ Abrams, it'll be a little bit easier. Or, this lineup doesn't have this guy, we can use this. Taking that extra time, I do think is going to make a difference in the long run, since all the little things add up.
100%. It's a long season. We're not even a month through it. So a lot more fab to go, a lot more season to go. Obviously, Lucas, we will have you back on here, talk regular redraft, talk some prospects, but really appreciate your insight. So that will do it. Back to the grind this weekend. Hope the weather treats us well. For Lucas Beery, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.